Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Hey, Dee.
Yeah?
Do you remember that time we read a book called Decorative Electricity with a chapter on fire risks?
Oh, how could I ever forget?
The tale of one Victorian Martha Stewart and her quest to introduce decorative electricity to the Victorian home.
Yes, yes, the story of petrified animals vomiting light.
Yes.
I remember.
It was very good. So when I presented this story to you, I did not present the entire story.
That's interesting, because it seemed pretty... It was a lot.
And for that reason, I neglected to include the final chapter. And so today, I bring to you Decorative Electricity with a Chapter on Fire Risks, Chapter 12, the final chapter.
Is it the chapter on fire risks?
No, we did do that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we did cover that one.
We did cover that one.
So what's the final chapter about? This is so mysterious.
The final chapter is titled Some Personal Experiences.
Oh, are they all fiery?
They're all electrical. I can promise you that much.
Yep.
So if I may, read directly.
Oh, you may.
The public, who through long winter evenings and longer London fogs sit reading by the cool and steady light of their electric lamps, but who are most indignant if by any chance it flickers or fails them, do not realize how intense the struggle has been for those pioneers of electric lighting who have toiled so hard and incessantly to surprise yet one more of nature's secrets and to wring from iron those drops of golden light. So already this is a hit, I see.
Am I being fucking shamed for my electricity not working?
Yeah. Like, next time the fucking power goes out, maybe spare a thought for the fucking engineers who made that possible, you ingrate.
Like, next time a cop car careens into the transformer box up my street, you know, thus ruining my game of Overwatch, and I'm like, aw, dang! Just laughing at the fact that I play Overwatch.
Yeah, yeah, I am, actually.
I haven't actually played in, like, 2 years.
Uh-huh. Keep telling yourself that.
I haven't. I own a lot of D.Va merch, but I haven't, because it's a bad game. So I'm like, aw, dag, my games, my sick gamer points. And like, the ghost of a Victorian woman is going to just apparate and be like, for shame! You do not recognize the struggle, the pain.
Yes.
The miracle of electricity. And it's like, yeah, I can't because the miracle has left me.
So that was the first paragraph.
That's such a good first paragraph. I wish all books started that way.
Perhaps no one but an electric engineer's wife can truly judge of what that struggle has been.
Oh, I wonder where she got that hot take. Electric hot take.
So rude. So needlessly rude to this woman.
But I, or perhaps some other electrical engineer's wife, do understand the pain. Respect the unearthly light.
In all other branches of science, the experiments are carried out in private, and generally with friendly assistance, and when the day's work is done, the experimenter can rest till morning, and start refreshed on another day of toil.
Oh, this bitch was out of touch with what other science was like.
No science matters except electrical engineering.
Well, she thinks that, like, other science has, like, friendly assistance, and that you ever get to sleep. I hope we have any scientist listeners out there not in electrical engineering who are just fuming.
In the development of the public distribution of electricity for lighting purposes, from the very nature of the problem involved, every experiment has had to be made in public, and every failure has been immediately exposed to the criticism, not only of friends, but of an indifferent public, and of those who, for various reasons of their own, desired failure.
I don't know if that last one. This one goes out to my haters.
Basically.
Were there actually... Okay, you would actually know this. Were there people out there watching electric scientists going like, oh god, I hope he doesn't do it.
Yeah, all the people who had invested heavily in gas.
I didn't think of that.
All the people who had heavily invested in gas did not want electricity to come into town and rob them of their gas money.
I was so caught up in the euphoria of the science shade that I forgot capitalism existed.
God, what a blissful world you lived in
for
a moment.
Nice.
Further, the work has been as continuous day and night as it is necessary for a public supply of electricity to be.
Yeah. It's true.
Many an engineer's wife knows how common it was 4 or 5 years ago for their husbands, who had come back late at night, worn out and exhausted, to be fetched again by the message that there was something wrong at the works. We could all of us tell stories of difficulty and danger, of new and untried machinery that had got to work right, of difficulties that had to be overcome and met by new inventions before the businessmen had time to find out if they existed, of engineers deserted by their men, and doing single-handed the work of a whole staff throughout a winter's night, though happily these latter cases are rare, and none know better than engineers what they owe to the loyalty and courage, the nerve and skill of the workmen in their employ. As in other conditions of life, workmen will always follow, but they require to be sure that their chiefs know how to lead.
Well, I mean, I appreciate the pro-labor bent.
The still somehow classist pro-labor.
Yeah, I mean, like...
The working class is naturally made up of followers.
Naturally.
Naturally.
But they must steady the godly hand that leads. I mean, honest to God, there are a lot of people who don't speak even that well of laborers, so I'll give her a little bit.
I will give with one hand and take with the other.
Well, I mean, she really is making this all about her now, isn't she?
Listen, this is Mrs. Gordon's time to shine.
It's my
shine,
turn.
Shine as bright as the electric light bulb.
That cool, refreshing light.
God, I wish she could have seen LEDs. She would have flipped her goddamn guard.
Oh, she would have just immediately pissed her pants.
Through the convenient slit in Victorian underwear.
And that's a topic for another episode.
Rational dress movement episode still in progress.
It's rough.
The pioneers of a new faith or a new science pour their life into its development. Health, pleasure, and home life are cheerfully sacrificed to help it on its way, and all engineers' wives can tell of the entire absorption of mind and ideas involved, which, though it is a price they readily pay for their share in their husband's ambition, is no less a price and a very heavy one. I trust I shall not be considered egotistical if I write of some personal experiences.
You trusted wrong.
They may perhaps obtain a little public interest as being types of those of many others working in the same field.
You know that, like, I want, you know, I just imagine telling on yourself like that.
Yeah, no. Our early married life was spent in the country, where we owned a large laboratory and a small house attached.
Wait. To electricity, or... Oh, the husband. I thought she was being, like, really clever and like, saying she was married to electricity.
No, she was not married to electricity.
Like, I thought it was, like, poetic.
She was married to her husband, the electrical engineer.
Right, yeah, that makes sense.
In those days, I was bottle washer and laboratory assistant to my husband, who wasn't electricity, but an actual human man. Money for experimenting was scarce, and the makeshifts adopted in the laboratory were sometimes more ingenious than conducive to the comfort of the rest of the house. Well do I remember my dismay on finding one morning that all the kitchen crockery was full of acids and villainous compounds, and the cook informing me with an injured air that we could have no more pastry till we released her rolling pin, which was then covered in tinfoil and adjusted as one of the principal conductors in an experiment that I well knew would last many weeks.
Imagine complaining in the same breath that you reference having a cook.
I mean, you know. You know, but also, like, her husband commandeered every fucking stick of silverware in the kitchen.
Liz, that's just real talk.
For weeks.
That's just real talk. That's just what scientists be like.
Scientists be like, fuck your dinner.
They wicked do, though.
We went over to Paris in order that Mr. Gordon might make some experiments in a French atelier.
What a hard life this was.
I thought that I spoke French with tolerable fluency, but after some attempts to translate or even give the sense of such phrases as "the plumber block wants shifting for fear the belt should slip off the countershaft," or "the armature core of the dynamo is not sufficiently laminated," my vanity received a severe blow as my husband sorrowfully remarked, "My dear, I thought you knew French."
Yeah, it turns out you can't speak made-up words in French. They're not gonna, like, grok it.
Mr. Gordon himself plunged into scientific debate with the happy reflection that he knew a language and a quarter, while the French inventor knew but one language, and with such energy that the Frenchman frequently remarked, Monsieur votre mari parle français avec coucou de courage.
And yet my vanity receives a well-known blow that I do not know French.
Your husband speaks French with a great deal of courage.
Nice. Oh, I'm gonna start using that one.
I'm gonna start telling people that they speak English with a great deal of courage.
Yes, yeah.
Like
yeah.
Native speakers.
I think especially specifically in, like, deployed when people are disparaging other languages.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever.
You speak English with a great deal of courage.
Yeah, I wanna make that a thing. We gotta make this book hot, popular, so that it does a thing.
Walking to and from the atelier, the discussions were animated as to the future and possibilities of electric lighting. And I well remember one wet afternoon when we were walking along and discussing the number of revolutions per second that could be forced out of a high-speed machinery. A French working man in a blouse thrust his head beneath the umbrella and remarked in a quite indescribable tone, "Mais quelle intéressante histoire!"
That didn't happen. I don't even know what that guy said, but this is fake.
But what an interesting story!
Yeah, oh, I usually do, huh? Yeah, always, always, always.
I think it happened. I believe every word that Mrs. Gordon says.
Yeah, you think Mrs. Gordon and her husband spoke almost strictly in, like, in-depth scientific talk, and then a random Frenchman was just like, "Whoa, it's fucking cool!"
Speaking of disparaging the working class.
I think it's dumb, and it didn't happen. This is like, so...
So you're calling r/that happened on this.
I'm calling r/that happened. This is, like, this is the Victorian version of saying, "So I was in Starbucks." Which is like a 50-50 chance that the next few lines will be bullshit.
I was in Starbucks and everybody clapped. Yeah, no, this
they
happened.
Gave me $10. Yeah, the Frenchman was like, "Sacre bleu! Je m'appelle $10. Francs? Was it francs?
Je m'appelle means. Je m'appelle means my name is.
Yeah. He was the early rapper. They call him 10 francs. On account of these 10 francs.
D. Franck, the Victorian rapper.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a very early 2 Chainz. They call him 10 francs.
Why not 80 francs, D?
Blaze it.
French counting was a mistake.
Hey, French. I'm sorry, everyone who speaks and likes French. It's great. It's amazing. It's a wonderful country. They have a very strong affinity for laborer unions, and I think that's great. But, like, the language...
The numbers could be stronger.
The numbers could be better.
We could perhaps call 80, 80 and not 420s.
I saw how bird was spelt and I had an aneurysm and died.
You're gonna fucking... You're gonna shit your pants when you find out what they did to squirrel.
Oh, I don't even want... Oh, no.
I'd tell you, but it's literally unpronounceable. With the possible development of electric lighting, our country laboratory became inadequate, and we moved up to a small house in London. Then began the real struggle of our engineering life. Mr. Gordon worked at a factory at Wharf Road. It would take a long book, and it is far beyond the scope of this chapter to tell of all the hopes and fears and disappointments of those 2 years. Many other engineers were, with great patience and courage, striving to overcome difficulties. They could also tell of all the trials of a career begun in the patent office, and of many of their wives, like myself, have hated the look of the patent agent's envelope, with its well-known contents, stating so politely that a fresh installment of fees was due.
God, I hate patent offices. And love France.
All right, bizarre OD.
Are you implying that regular D really enjoys the patent office? You're right.
There has been much unnecessary litigation about electric light patents by persons who forget that obtaining the possession of a patent without obtaining possession of the inventor is at best a barren victory. For the patent, divorced from the inventor's cooperation and assistance, is but the corpse of the invention without its soul.
Anti-capitalist, I like it.
The records of the patent office and the scientific papers of 1880 contain an account of an incandescent iridium lamp, invented by Mr. Gordon. And which, in October, had attained about as much perfection as an iridium lamp was capable of.
Whoa! Whoa, neg!
And arrangements for its manufacture on a large scale were nearly completed. On the night of November 24th, 1880, a paper was read at the Society of Telegraphic Engineers describing a new lamp, the invention of one Mr. John Wilson Swan. By a curious coincidence, I was dining that night with friends, and sat next to the member for Newcastle. He began to tell me of the discovery of the new glow lamp by one of his constituents. He described the filament made not from a costly metal, but from common carbon, and I knew at once that iridium glow lamps were things of the past.
High opinion of iridium.
When I returned from the dinner party and Mr. Gordon came home after hearing the lecture, he was filled with enthusiastic admiration at the new discovery, which could at that time only be shared by those equally competent to understand its value. To a real worker in the field with genuine enthusiasm for his work, it matters little who does the work so long as it is done, but to the wife it is different. She, perhaps, may be allowed to drop a silent tear over the invention child that she has watched from its birth, and which she sees her stronger-minded husband abandoned by the roadside, simply without a pang.
What?
There is no time in our short span of life for inventors to mourn over the stillborn children of their brains.
What the shit? Holy fuck. Whoa. That's not a sentence I'd say out loud now.
No?
No. And you know, the relative rate of stillbirth is much lower.
Listen, she's a mom. She can get away with this.
I swear to God, she really went off, huh? Was she really upset about iridium lamps, or?
I think she was upset that her husband had sunk so much into inventing a lamp that ran on a very costly metal.
Oh, okay.
Only to find that a low-cost solution was readily available, and thus undercut all of her husband's scientific progress and hard work.
That makes more sense. Mourn the stillbirth, lying cold and dead in my husband's arms.
Meanwhile, he just chucks it over his shoulder and keeps going.
Yeah, he's just like, well, next one. Save me a couple bucks.
But yeah, you remember the reason we first brought up this book on the podcast was the iridium lamps.
Yeah, we were talking about iridium lamps.
Because you were talking about how everyone was banking on curing diabetes with stem cells, which are difficult to procure and expensive to work with.
Yeah.
Only to discover that the tuberculosis vaccine, which we had cranked out several years ago and could produce with relative ease, might restore pancreatic function.
Yeah. Yeah. Which must have really been, like, maybe some scientist, some microbiologist's wife was weeping into her open palms.
I don't think she was, though, because, like...
No, probably not, because stem cells are still very useful for a variety of...
other shit.
Sciences and therapies, yes.
Meanwhile, the tuberculosis vaccine is still undergoing human testing, but...
Yeah.
For pancreatic function restoration purposes. For tuberculosis purposes, it's pretty well proven.
Yeah, it's solid in its field. And I suggest getting it.
Consider vaccines, won't you?
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, was this our big coming out as pro-vax?
Yeah, we're pro-vax, by the way.
Yeah, majorly.
Anti-polio pro-vaccination.
Yeah, I'm super anti-polio. I gotta admit, not a big fan of shingles.
Every time someone's like, polio was not even a big deal, I just remember my high school principal, who's had one leg that he dragged behind him through the halls because he was a survivor of polio.
Yeah, polio's a living memory I think people forget.
Yeah.
It's not like a forgotten history.
Like, he used to joke about how his childhood nickname was Hopalong. Like, he had a great time with it, but I also, like, cannot imagine anyone saying to his face, yeah, polio wasn't a big deal.
Polio is easy, what are you talking about? Yeah, so no, say no to polio.
Say no to polio.
More like polino. Put that on a t-shirt.
Anyway, this has been our iridium digression, you're welcome. Yeah. Prior to reading this... I didn't realize iridium was a real thing.
Yeah.
I thought it was a made-up material for Stardew Valley.
Yeah, that one sticks in my craw pretty frequently. Like, I took a lot of science courses. I did know about iridium, but every time I'm reminded, I have that moment where, like, wait, what the fuck? Isn't that what's in Wolverine?
No, that's adamantium.
I know, that was a joke of... This is jokes.
There are no jokes allowed on this podcast.
Sorry, all right. I'm sorry. You're right. Should have known better. But yeah, it's not Stardew Valley.
To continue. Human progress moves on relentlessly, if slowly, and no man can say it nay. It is a car of triumph to him who sees the world from its summit. But he who will not press closely in its track is lost and swallowed up in the vague crowd behind. Now all Mr. Gordon's attention was turned to dynamo machines and to the perfecting of the manner of making and distributing the current to the electric lamps.
Can I admit something?
Sure.
I thought dynamo machines were made up until just now.
No. They make electricity.
That's such a fake fucking name to give it. That's such a fake dumb dynamo? No, dynamo. This is the dynamo engine.
It's dynamic.
I'm gonna kill light and electricity.
Okay, well, can we finish the podcast first so we can... Because like, we need electricity to record and also distribute this podcast.
All right, well, something nice.
I have often regretted that I am not a sewing woman.
Okay.
Observation in life leads me to notice that the sewing woman feels anxiety less keenly and vividly than her less domesticated sister.
Oh my God, I'm not like other girls.
The mechanical action of the fingers relieves the tension of thought and soothes the mind of woman in the same manner as smoking calms the mind of the sterner sex. Now, I don't know if you remember from the last time we read from this book, the bit about how, yeah, you could have a sewing table in your room to sew your children's clothes, or you could pick up a fucking book once in a while and be a parent.
Yeah, I remember that. I see she's turning a little on the heel on her opinion about owning a sewing table.
Or perhaps her opinion on sewing as a fit activity for mothers might be a little bit of a sour grape situation.
Yeah, it seems like, yeah. Just, well, I don't waste my time making fucking pants. I'm thinking about science, okay? And my kids. And doing science to my kids.
Wait, no. Then the husband will just leave them by the roadside.
And she has like, shit, yeah. Just throw them right over his shoulder. Yeah, but wow. And then, you know, she has a couple of glasses of vino and she's like, God, I wish I could sew. All I do is think.
Well, I remember one afternoon when the anxiety became simply unendurable, driving down to Wharf Road with my little girl. Almost as soon as I entered the factory, the song of the high-speed machinery reached my ear. A high, strident tone. The rattle and throb of the dynamo made the ground shake beneath our feet. I did not need to ask any questions. The scream of the machine worked beyond its endurance, and the pale faces of all engaged in the experiment told its own tale. So to recap, she just brought her child
I was actually just like, man, you ever see those, like, oh, bad parent, because they brought their kid to a concert?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, This, yeah, good parent. Now,
this dynamo's about to explode. You know who needs to see this? My little girl.
My little girl. And you know what? She wouldn't be here if I were fucking sewing at home. She wouldn't be near this incredibly volatile, very loud and dangerous engine. So, checkmate, tailors.
Checkmate, seamstresses.
You don't know anything.
But next day, early in the afternoon, I heard the quick slam of the front door, which always cried successful day to my waiting, listening ear.
Really? I thought it meant, like, bad husband. Closes his door too hard.
Mr. Gordon's first words were, the whole machine has gone to bits. They are taking it up in a shovel.
How exciting! What a good day!
But his next words were, it has worked for 10 minutes and demonstrated success.
I mean, that is the scientist attitude.
He began at once to make designs for a new and much larger machine on the same electrical principle, but better constructed mechanically.
And then he's like, wait, honey, I didn't see you there with the kids yesterday, did I? Because it really exploded.
Do you really think an engineer father would think of that?
You're right. You're right. You could have just clipped at the father.
Wow!
Sorry, that was dark.
Wow!
Oh, I feel this one getting cut in my bones.
Ooh. Whoa. Oof. He began at once to make designs for a new and much larger machine on the same electrical principle, but better constructed mechanically.
Cool, do it. You should have did it right the first time.
You have to prove it's possible first, then you can make it, like, probable.
Good. This is a catch of me sitting on the corner smoking a big cigar going, I don't know, you scientists, why don't you just make it good the first time?
You'd save so much time and energy if you just did it correctly the first time.
Yeah, and then I'd die in a machine explosion.
This was put in hand within a fortnight, and when completed, entirely fulfilled even the inventor's anticipations, and is at regular work to this day.
My God.
My God. On the success of this machine being demonstrated, arrangements were made to light Paddington Station, and the plans for the first large electric supply station in England were put in hand. You're thinking of the bear, aren't you?
Oh, God, you called me the fuck out, yeah.
You American.
I was literally...
Philistine.
My brain started racing with going like, wait, is it named after the bear?
The
and
bear...
And then by the moment you said, you're thinking about the bear, aren't you? It occurred to me that the bear was named after the station.
The bear is named after the station because within the fiction of Paddington Bear, they find the bear in the station. And he's such a useless amnesiac that they have to fucking name him.
Wow, well, you know, at least I wasn't making fun of the bear.
Paddington drools, corduroy rules. Fight me.
Wow! Because this corduroy was named after bad pants.
But he at least went out and fucking did something. He saw that there was a flaw within himself and he went out to search out a solution. On his own. Self-driven.
Did you not see Paddington Bear 2?
Correct.
The movie?
I didn't.
In which he goes to jail?
Good. And it's then, where he belongs.
And then escapes from jail?
A mistake. They should have chained that bear up. He's a danger to society.
All I'm saying is that Paddington is going places.
Paddington should go fewer places because he clearly cannot handle himself.
I wish I were kidding. That is actually the plot of Paddington Bear 2.
We all wish you were kidding. But no, Paddington Station exists and is real and was among the first to be lit by electric light.
Wow. Is that how the bear came to life?
My God. Oh no.
You transitioned that joke so well, I almost forgot the hatred in your eyes for the half second after I said that sentence.
Frankenstein 2. Train bear.
So they had to put him in fucking jail. Now you're thinking about the bear.
It's just like, I just wanted to tell you a nice story about electrical innovation, and you had to bring in the fucking bear.
Apparently your least favorite British bear, yeah.
Yeah, of all the British bears, eh. No.
I prefer the ones that are having a picnic.
I prefer the ones that go waltzing.
This is too deep. The cuts are too deep. We're gonna bleed out and die.
Are you familiar with the hit party tune Waltzing with Bears?
I'm wicked not, though.
So it's a children's song about their Uncle Walter, who every night sneaks out of the house to go waltzing with bears in the woods. Despite the family's efforts to continually restrain him, they cannot prevent him from waltzing with bears.
Oh, that's not what he's actually doing, though. It's like a metaphor for, like, cocaine.
See, I was thinking it was a metaphor for going to Provincetown.
I wish. That'd be a much better
song. Their bachelor uncle keeps waltzing with bears. I'm like, yeah, I bet he does.
Stop sneaking out and going to Provincetown.
Anyway. Coming back from the bear detour.
Yeah.
To electricity.
They electrified Paddington Bear Station.
Yes. The Paddington Passenger Station, known to the public, is but a small portion of the district that had to be lighted, which comprised also the large offices running from Pred Street to... UK listeners, please write in and tell us how the fuck we're supposed to pronounce these.
Could you spell that word, please?
P-R-A-E-D Street.
Praede?
Praed Street. I don't fucking know.
In most linguistic, like, rules, I know it would be Praede.
To Bishop's Road.
Oh, I know how to pronounce that one.
The Great Western Hotel, the Goods Station, which is larger than the Passenger Station, the Locomotive Station, Westbourne Park, and Royal Oak Stations, and the lines between, making a district of about a mile and a half in length.
Is it really called the Goods Station?
Well, Goods Station. It's the station for goods rather than passengers.
Oh, I thought it was like, this is a good one.
We finally made a good station, lads.
Guys, we got one. We got one good station. We're
the
done.
Good station.
This is the good one. Okay. That is pretty impressive, though.
Yeah, no. A mile and a half of electricity.
Yeah, shortly after the electricity machine exploded.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of is a triumph.
Go for it. Shine on, you crazy iridium lamps. The quantity of electricity that had to be generated for the supply of the arc and incandescent lamps would be equal to the supply of 30,000 of our modern glow lamps. Engines and boilers of nearly 2,000 horsepower in all were erected. And three dynamos weighing 44 tons each were designed and built for the purpose. 11 miles of iron troughing were buried between the lines, and in this, some 500 miles of insulated wire were laid.
Damn.
Damn.
Three dynamos.
And then I walked those 500 miles.
And then I walked 500 more. Just to be the man who electric lit Paddington Station and its door.
Thank you. Thank you for coming along with me on that journey. That 1,000-mile journey.
It was about 1 mile.
Mile and a half.
It was about a mile and a half.
The winter of 1884 through 1885 was one of the wettest seasons on record, and the loose earth excavated from the trenches was converted into mud indescribable.
Wow.
And in this, engineers, foremen, and workmen stood from dawn till dark for some 4 months. They seldom had more than 60 seconds of undisturbed work, owing to the passing trains.
Losers. You built your trenches right next to train tracks, didn't you?
They're lighting the train station, D!
No.
They're down in the fucking tunnels in freezing mud while trains are actively going by!
I can't help but notice that you try to describe that mud.
Like a fool, I attempted to describe the mud indescribable. The eldritch mud, if you will.
Yeah, like Icarus tilting to the sun, you did.
But no, like, can you imagine?
That's scary. For a brief moment. That's scary as hell.
And the most warning you get is someone be like, hey, train, arrow clear.
It's bad. It's bad times.
It's not great. The monotonous iteration of the warning cry, upline or downline, was very trying to the nerves. Because they were seconds away from being crushed by a fucking train.
Yeah, I can't imagine why they were so nervous.
Jesus. Mr. Gordon personally superintended every detail of the work and of the rules that were formed for the safety of the men. And the arrangements were so fortunate that no life or limb was lost.
Honestly, that's kind of that's an upgrade from most things that were happening at the time.
We can't manage that kind of record on construction projects now.
Yeah, no, that's actually really intense.
But Mr. Gordon himself had a very severe, though happily short, illness, resulting from cold and overstrained nerves. Because he was responsible for keeping everyone who was working on the active train lines from being crushed by a train.
Yeah, I'm gonna diagnose him with a case of the freaky deekies. I think he may have freaked out.
Early in 1886, as the works were still incomplete, the businessmen concerned in the enterprise almost lost heart, and called in one of the best-known electrical experts of the day to advise them on the question as to whether the works should be proceeded with or abandoned.
Benjamin Franklin.
No. His opinion was entirely unfavorable, and concluded with the words, "I will stake my professional reputation that these works, even if started, cannot run for a month."
Well, get ready to lose your job, douche.
Mr. Gordon, being asked what reply he had to make, suggested that as the works were so near completion, they should be finished, when he would accept the expert's challenge to run them for a month on trial and would abide by the result.
What does that mean? Abide by the result?
That means, basically, this guy was like, these machines will fall apart within a month. And Mr. Gordon was like, bitch, watch me go.
Oh, okay. 'Cause it just seemed like, well, there wasn't really, like, a finale set. Like, it wasn't just like, and if they don't run for a month, then you're going to have to belly dance for me at Paddington Station.
He was gonna do that anyway.
I mean, Mr. Gordon, he needs a way to relax.
Listen, he's gotta get rid of those strained nerves somehow. Like,
I think it's as good a way as any.
He just needs to dance like no one's watching.
You go, Mr. Gordon.
Go on. Shine on, you crazy incandescent lamp.
Mrs. Gordon, maybe take up sewing? I don't know what to tell you.
She can't, D. She's not like other girls.
Whew, boy.
This trial commenced at 6 p.m. on the 21st of April, 1886, and is not yet concluded, as the works have ran continuously and successfully from that day to this.
I'm taking that was much more than a month.
7 years.
Oh, it must have felt good to write that sentence.
Yeah.
Well, I can't tell you how it ended, because it didn't.
It never ended. This is the train that never fucking ends, bitch.
How's unemployment taste?
Not great, it doesn't seem. But yeah, no. Yeah, this book, written in 1891. So yeah, 7 years, which is longer than a month.
Yeah, I can't help but notice.
Can't help but notice. Interesting. Interesting.
Interesting. Interesting.
After this came 8 months of harassing litigation by occupants of houses near the works.
Uh-oh.
To obtain an injunction to stop them.
Ah.
One ingenious gentleman swore an affidavit to the effect that the meat in his larder was turned bad by the electricity in the air.
I was about to feel bad because I thought something bad may have happened to these people, but apparently they're just lying.
While every dish or jug broken by a careless servant within a radius of half a mile had been jumped off the shelves by the vibration of the dynamos.
Well, that might be true.
I doubt it. Because I'm reminded of the people who complain when, like, wind turbines go up near their house.
Yeah, and they're just like, oh god, it gave me or hepatitis.
Yeah, it's just like...
it blew the hepatitis into my body.
Yeah, like... it's just like, it I'm so sorry we brought you clean energy after decades of mechanical engineering.
I was going to be like, well, you know, there are those people who are near the train station, but, you know, my brain caught up with reality, and I was like, well, those are the trains.
Up line, down line. The works, however, were never stopped for an hour for this or any other cause, though it is only fair to say that some thousands of pounds were spent to make alterations in such portions of the machinery as it was considered would cause real annoyance.
I see.
Soon after the Paddington Electric Light Station was fairly underway, Mr. Gornon had occasion to go to America on business for 3 months.
What a mistake.
These 3 months were my very hardest personal experience. Mr. Gordon naturally felt the keenest anxiety about the works and the impending lawsuit, and in order to send him news, I visited the station regularly. In spite of the anxiety, the details of the working of the station were of the greatest interest. I always felt as if the dynamos were sentient beings, and they all had characteristics of their own.
Does she go into detail?
Number one was not quite dependable, for her shaft, which was 8 inches in diameter and 11 feet long,
oh boy,
had been sprung...
get her number.
had been sprung a 64th of an inch out of truth in transport, and required incessant nursing for the first few months, and consumed enormous quantities of castor oil. However, with care, her constitution recovered, and she is now working as steadily as her sisters.
Are they all girls?
In her
sisters,
mind.
Sisters, yeah, yeah. It's fucking it's dumb questions day.
These things happen. But yeah, basically, someone dropped the dynamo off a truck.
You know.
And knocked the shaft a 64th of an inch out of alignment.
It happens. And that's the bitch about, like, science, is, like, 64th of an inch, it matters.
Oh, God, does it matter. Incessant trouble was caused at first by injury to the mains from the hot water discharged from the locomotives, and some miles of these had to be uncovered and a layer of clay put above them, after which the gravel was replaced and no more trouble was experienced.
All right, well, I'm gonna raise an eyebrow at them for not figuring that the train's belching boiling water might get things wet.
Yeah. So they went through all the fucking work of putting all of those men in danger by working on active train lines without considering that, hey, the train's constantly running overhead and dumping water into the ground might get the electricity wet.
Yeah, yeah, it just seems like an oversight.
A little bit.
These trains that functionally run on water, they're producing actually quite a lot of water.
The steam engine is making things moist. Who could have possibly foreseen?
I didn't really figure that was going to happen, but hey, locomotives come at you fast, but life comes faster.
Speaking of life coming at you fast, I remember being told of a young workman who had a perfect genius for electricity. Unfortunately, as so many other intelligent workmen, he was afflicted with a passion for drink. The manager told him that at the next offense, he must leave. A week later, the man was found quite drunk, but pleaded as an excuse that his wife had just had twins. Some sympathy was felt for him, and he was granted a reprieve. 3 weeks later, the same thing occurred. His excuse, that during the night one of the twins had died, was not accepted.
What?
Victorian workers' rights. They don't have any.
My wife had two kids. It's harsh. All right, man. I get it.
One of my kids is dead.
One of the kids died. Well, now you're fucking taking the piss, Mark.
Seriously?
Wow. Like,
yeah, I can't imagine why the working men drink.
You can't picture it.
Jesus Christ. Like, imagine having to deal with that level of lack of empathy every day, day in, day out, when you know you are just as intelligent as the people you're working for.
And imagine that's all happening in a muddy train tunnel.
In winter, with trains actively going past.
Yeah. Like, I drink. I would drink.
I would start drinking. During Mr. Gordon's absence, it was often said to me that the Paddington Works were constructed with 7 volcanoes, any one of which might explode at any moment. By day I had faith, but by night, I must confess that the suggested 7 volcanoes caused me many and many a sleepless hour.
Well, volcanoes will do that.
It was the same feeling that made the child exclaim, "I don't believe in bears, but please don't talk about them after dark."
What?
I think her child might be stupid.
What?
I don't believe in bears, but please don't talk about them after dark.
Well, apparently, spending all of your time not sewing and reading books did your children no good. Because they haven't even seemed to grasp the concept of bears.
Listen, if we've learned nothing this day, it's that bears are controversial.
Perhaps if you had sewn them a teddy bear, I don't know.
Not invented. We did a whole episode.
Oh my god, that's right.
We did a whole entire episode god. On teddy bears.
I've been sipping on my stupid bitch juice. There's still no excuse for that kid not to know about bears. Dumb child.
Electrical life in later years has not been less exciting than before. But it is not possible to judge of the proportions of experiences when we are in the midst of them. And happily, neither Manchester Square, Rathbone Place, nor any of the more modern stations have involved the same anxiety as their elder brother at Paddington.
So fake. All those names are so fake.
England is a real place.
Rathbone Station.
It's real.
Can you imagine talking about that? Never. Talking about casual, like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna stop by Rathbone Station.
I mean, last week we stopped at Cripplegate. I don't know what's stopping you.
Well, let's go.
The fathers and mothers of England seem to think that electrical science has been especially designed by Providence to afford openings for their superfluous sons.
What? Oh, whoa, wait.
Judging from my experience, they seem to think that all engineers walk about with good appointments and salaries in their pockets, and that if their sons show but the slightest taste for playing with electrical machines and giving shocks to their brothers and sisters, that they are entirely qualified for them.
They kind of are.
Practically, a considerable proportion, even of those who are admitted after the most careful selection, find that they have not sufficient nerve and physique for the work and have to leave it.
Wow, do you even lift, bro?
Do you even lift dynamos?
Judgy.
I heard a well-known engineer give an amusing account of a boy whose mother thought him a second Edison. He remarked that he was good for nothing but to hold one end of a wire, while another man wound it on a reel. And, he added meditatively, a hook driven into the wall did it better.
Well, we don't like kids here, I guess.
We don't like useless upper-class twits who think they can electrical engineer.
Yeah, coming from the mouth of an upper-class twit.
Listen. Listen.
But all must have a beginning, and the mind of a youth starting on his career in life is rather like an unhatched egg of the contents of which nothing is known, till it expands and breaks the shell. And there is a story we all have loved, of an ugly duckling in his trials, and he became a swan.
But that egg will never hatch if I take it so, and dash it upon the fucking rocks. Get your kids out of engineering, loser.
Swan is capitalized.
Is that a person?
Yes, because earlier it was the inventor of the carbon light bulb that drove her husband's iridium light bulb out of existence.
Oh! Oh my god! Oh my god!
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
There is nothing like the responsibilities of a new science for developing rapidly the resources and possibilities of character. The development of applied electrical science in all its branches has been astonishing. The life work of Faraday, Clerk Maxwell, Simons, Swan, Edison, and many others has brought it to its present state of development. Nor must the financiers be forgotten, whose enterprise, courage, and patience have made this development possible.
No, actually, I think we could forget them quite nicely.
And now that the electrical supply companies are covering London with their network of underground mains and supplying light to all the theaters, clubs, and houses in the districts that Parliament has allotted to them, respectively.
Good sentence.
I think we may drop the monotonous reiteration of the remark that the electric lighting is still in its infancy and own that it has grown to healthy manhood.
Oh, well, you know, multiple points.
The Victorians had electricity.
Yeah.
Not that I'm... Itcher.
Oh, that wasn't even, like, remotely where I was taking issue with the sentence.
You weren't taking issue with the monotonous reiteration of the remark that electric lighting is still in its infancy?
I mean, it's the classic, like, I don't need to tell you the next four sentences I'm gonna tell you. And then also comparing electricity to a penis.
What?
Manhood. It's a wiener.
Sure.
This can't be... Anyway.
You stand alone in this, my friend.
I stand alone. And yet I stand proud.
I need you to leave. This podcast, my house.
It does not need to be reiterated.
This city.
And yet...
Science, civilization, and thought move on.
Move on.
We are but one among many others, carrying bricks to the same pyramid, and each have their own tale to tell. The end of toil comes not in life, and nothing is ever quite so bad, no quite so good as we anticipate.
Jeez. I don't really like the tone she took at the end there.
The end.
What the fuck was that? But I guess we're all going to die someday. Goodbye.
Not an atypical closer for the Victorian period.
No, I guess
every book starts with, this is how science gets you closer to God, and every book ends with, we're all gonna die, goodbye!
But at least we made some science.
Thus ends Decorative Electricity with a chapter on fire risks.
It's a punchy end. I mean, I dunk on her a lot. I think it's cool to have a narrative from one of the many overlooked women in science who were frequently very much side by side with the men who got the notoriety or fame for the science. Like, I think that's very cool.
It's also one of the few narratives I've found of the process of converting from steam and gas power to electricity.
Yeah, like, it does seem like she was genuinely very invested in the process.
And also, like, to date, the only person I could find writing about it.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah.
So sorry I dunked on you so hard, but, you know, you made it really easy.
Sources for this episode include...
I can't imagine.
Decorative Electricity with a chapter on fire risks. Published 1892.
And the best book you'll ever read.
The best book. If you have any leads on other books about Victorians converting to electrical power, you can email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
Because you know Cam wants to know.
I desperately need to know. You can also check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks and join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends. And also check out our Tumblr, Antiques Freaks, all one word, which people are starting to rediscover and it's freaking me out.
Yeah, it's cool. We post a lot of, like, fun garbage there if you want, like, memes. A
lot of goth stuff, a lot of antique stuff.
Homoerotic clips of The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt.
I mean, you know. But, yeah. It's funny because, like, we have had, like, 700 followers on Tumblr for a year and a half now, and only just now are people starting to interact.
Yeah, it's great.
It's great, but, like...
It's super cool.
It's been freaking me out for a while that we had, like, 700 silent watchers. It's not, just like,
yeah.
Is this what you wanted? I don't know, because you never... I mean, tell me, you're just all standing there staring.
I mean, that's Tumblr, right? It's like thousands of people, like, blinking. And not to be too grim about the future of the website, but if I may quote, you know, the latest Star Wars, it's so good for you to be here with us at the end.
They got bought by WordPress.
It's probably going to be fine.
I have confidence because WordPress has been implementing Tumblr-like features to their own sites for a while now, so they at least... understand how it works and won't try to make it, quote, the next PDF.
please do some Googling on Tumblr, its acquisition by WordPress. It is so funny.
Anyway, antiques.
But so we do have one. It's fun.
We also have an Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks, where you can pick up a variety of vintage goods.
Including books. Lots of books.
So many books.
Here come the books.
And you can also, for deleted scenes, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you're there, you can join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
And it is not electrified.
No, but it is so very random. And vintage.
It's both.
Yes.
And if you like what you've heard here today, if you like what you've heard here on this podcast any day, it would be super great if you could go on down to wherever you're listening to this and give us a 5-star rating or whatever rating you think we deserve, but I think we've earned 5.
3.5.
Don't listen to him. It's ratings and stars and reviews are all really helpful to getting the podcast out there and getting ears here, and everyone needs to know about the miracle of electricity.
They do. They really do.
So please consider.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and getting us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes. And thank you for listening.
Especially you.
Goodbye.
Bye.